Welcome back, Inebriates. This is your faithful host, Andy, as always. And I'm joined today by, we've just been on such a string of like cool musicians. So welcome to the show, Nisa.
Thank you so much, Andy. I'm really excited to be here.
No problem. So you got a new album coming out. Shapeshifting is out on April 26th.
That's right. It's now April, so
it's so funny. Like I saw that date, I'm like, wait, has that already passed? This year has been such a blur, and I'm like, oh, no, we're getting into April.
I know. It feels like January was the longest month ever, and then February is short by nature, but also just felt like it blew by. And now it's like spring is on its way. Technically, it's already here, but in New York, like we've had a full spring, and we had our first like really nice day yesterday. So yeah, I'm excited to have good weather, to have the album coming out so soon. April is my birthday month, so it's just my favorite
happy
time.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
We finally had two good days back to back. Today's kind of middle of the road, but we had like rain for like 2 weeks straight, it felt like.
Oh man, it's currently rainy here too. And I find the rain to either be like creatively, at least like it can be like a push to like stay inside and do something and like write, or it can just like hinder me from feeling any motivation to do anything.
See, I'm more that. I'm more like, oh, it's a perfect nap day. Let's
totally
binge Netflix.
It does like bring exhaustion. It's like, cool, like there's no sun. That's my source of energy. So plants aren't happy. I'm not happy. So yeah, I'm having a medium day where like got a sandwich, like did some walking and like yoga and stuff, and now I'm ready to start my day officially.
Do you find that kind of morning ritual important to kind of like your workflow? Because like I'm very much such a creature of habit. Like,
yeah,
I have to like get up and I have to have my breakfast sandwich and my caffeine, and like don't talk to me before I have caffeine. And then like, which is always an interesting aspect when you live with people.
Absolutely.
Like, you seem moody. I'm like, shut up.
You know why? Don't ask. No, I have a similar thing where I think like my first 30 minutes of the day, if I need to like sit and drink coffee, and if I don't have access to coffee at home, like I need to go out and get coffee. Like same thing, like I'm nonverbal until I have caffeine, and then I need to like either journal, which I've been good at it the last half of the year. I'm very on and off with that kind of thing, but I prefer to do it in the morning. So I've started to do it in the morning with coffee, and then I'm ready to like start my day. But I like to have a nice walk as well. And that's harder in the winter, like to motivate. But a lot of my process, at least like writing and when I'm working on something, is movement helps me a lot. So any sort of movement, if it means like getting myself out of the house for a little bit, or like working out, or if it's also just like travel, it can be anything. But I'm kind of spurred by like not being, I'm a creature of habit who likes to do things in different places. I think that's the way to put it.
That's that. Yeah, I am. That's a good way to put it. Like, I'm a creature of habit in the morning. And then like once my day starts, my days are just like so weird and chaotic, and
totally,
they're never the same. When I was talking to someone else recently who does like a lot of journaling. Do you find that like really important to your songwriting?
I found it in the last year to be really important. Before that, I kind of used it songwriting in lieu of journaling a lot, and it led to this. I was just talking to a friend about this. It led to this like realization for me that like I was communicating with myself a lot through my songs, and that wasn't always what I was trying to do. And I would often like listen back to something that maybe I never ended up recording. It was just like a demo in my room, and it was a song that didn't, you know, ultimately make the record or make like a project, but it was an important song for me to write. And now I think journaling has helped me kind of find like the fine line. Sometimes I don't need to write a song to understand how I feel, but a lot of the time that ends up happening regardless. So yeah, I think journaling does help, and it does feed into it. And sometimes they kind of like the lines blur.
Yeah. I used to be really diligent and draw every day in my sketchbook.
Really?
And then, you kind of fall on and off with those things.
Yeah.
And, whoever it was that I was talking to recently, about journaling. I was like, maybe I should start to journal. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I want all my thoughts available on paper. Yeah.
If you think about it, you're like, why are Sylvia Plath's journals accessible to us? Like, she, I know she would have hated that. And there are a couple of writers where they wrote essays and they wrote books, but their private journals are out in the world. And obviously, like, I don't think my journals are going to become like public knowledge in the future, but I do think, like, do I want that in writing sometimes as well? So I can relate.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I mean, it may not even be like public, but even just to like those closest to you, you know, and it's one of those, like, part of me is like, you know, it'd be kind of cool to leave something like that behind for my kids. You know, my kids are like young adults now, and which is a really interesting time because, you know, you're kind of seeing them as like people and not children anymore. Ooh. And to kind of be, you know, like, my parents were so old school traditional that, like, I don't know anything about them.
Yeah.
But to kind of give them like insight of like who I was, you know, more in depth, but in the same aspect, being like, I don't know. Cause I feel like I would, I don't, you know, it's just that.
I totally get that. Yeah.
Where you're putting it down, do you ever go, well, I'm not going to write that down?
I think that exactly can be what happens. And that's why I admire a lot of songwriters who just lay it bare. And like, an example for me is like Joni Mitchell, who like will just write a song, mm-hmm. having had, like, you know, to give up her daughter at a really young age, having had a child she was ready for, and like writing that song and sharing it with the world in such a brave way. And I think about like me not being able to sometimes even write down thoughts that maybe I don't want to have ever been uncovered, things that I can feel and think, but I'm scared to like see on paper.
Yeah.
I feel that completely. And I think that it can be really hard if you have a ritual for it too. You write every day to like break through to a point where you actually do start to write down the things that, you know, maybe are in your head and you never have imagined like letting out into the world. And that's why it's so interesting. I think writing is like both a way to be confessional and a way to like have realizations.
I think
it's like one of those things too, where maybe I'll do it all year this year and I'll need a break next year. And so I'm trying really hard to like stick with it and see how it reflects on my music and, you know, just personally how I feel after a year of doing it every day.
Do you, when I was drawing every single day, like, I would see an incredible difference in my just like quality of output.
Yeah.
You know, and even like I look back and go, I don't even draw that good now. And like, how can I draw worse now than I did then? And do you find that kind of correlates with your songwriting, where like the more you do it?
Yeah, I definitely do. I think like there was a period too, not last summer, but the summer before, where I was writing a song every day. Like, I was demoing and then I would go out on a walk and I would listen to it. And mm-hmm. it led to, especially when you have like, I guess this also would apply to drawing, I'm assuming, but if you're like trying to get to something, to a point, you've been trying to draw this figure or like this image that you see, but you haven't been able to really communicate yet. And I think with songs, sometimes like I'll write an iteration of a song 10 times that, you mm-hmm. know, doesn't necessarily sound exactly the same, but has a similar energy to it. And like by the 10th day, I will get there. Or maybe it was like the 6th day and the 10th wasn't that good. But it's the process of repetition that really, like, you know, gives me that courage to keep pushing the limits or the boundaries. So yeah, I actually did find that, and I haven't been writing too many songs in the last few months. I took a little bit of a break with the record release and like preparing for it. And I think it's partially because these songs were written 3 years ago now for the record coming out, Shapeshifting. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to get back into the space that I was when I was writing them, and also just like, you know, connect with the songs as I'm releasing them and having people listen to them for the first time. And that almost has made me want to create space for them. So I think it's interesting, like, writing every day versus like taking breaks, and like what that can do to your writing and just like where you end up going with your work afterwards.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you've experienced that with drawing as well.
Well, it's funny because you're saying how like you were doing it to kind of achieve a goal. And that's like literally how that drawing every day started. I mean, everyone's like, oh, you should draw every day. And you're like, yeah, sure. But hands are one of the hardest things to draw.
I've heard that from so many people. Why is that? I mean, I know why.
Like, they're very complicated.
Totally. Yeah, yeah. And everyone's are different. And
everyone's are different. They're very complicated. And it's hands and faces. And part of the reason is you're so accustomed to seeing them that like if you're drawing an elephant and the elephant's a little funky, you may not pick up on it because you don't see an elephant every day. Where like people's faces and hands, like you can right away go, I don't know what's wrong with that, but there's something wrong with that.
It's uncanny valley. Yeah.
And so that's what it was. Every single day I was drawing a hand in a different position. And like by the end of the month, I was like, damn, that is a hand. That's the way it's supposed to look.
Yeah.
But I'm really curious about like how you said you were making space to kind of or trying to get back in the headspace of when you wrote those songs 3 years ago. Is it important for you to kind of be in that headspace like when you're performing them?
That's a really good question. I think with this record specifically, it will be important to me. I haven't performed many of the songs live yet. I have a tour coming up in May where I'll be trying a lot of the material out live in a band setting for the first time. And I found that like, because of how different they are from the music I've released before, even though sequentially they were written, you know, before some of the songs that I put out in the past few years, I found that like it is important to go into that world because it is a very specific one sonically. And it is a bit of like character acting in terms of like, these songs are deeply personal and they were written about my experiences. But in many ways, I've shed that skin. And so I find that it's helpful to kind of walk back and like try and understand myself 3 years ago and what I was going through. And it's definitely leaking into the performing aspect as well, because I think, you know, a lot of many intersecting parts of our lives are performance, right? And identity in many ways is performance. So I found that performing live, that's an album that is in many ways about my identity and, you know, a lot of revelations that I was having and communication style and all that stuff. It's like, I have to remember that this is still me, but, you know, me 3 years ago had a very different outlook on many things. And so I find that kind of like listening and, you know, performing with a band, it brings me back into that place. And I think it's actually helpful because I think I connect more deeply to the music that I wrote and like stand by it. Because I know a lot of the time I've talked to many artist friends, and I'm sure you've experienced this as well, where when you're years removed from something, you think, oh, like that, you know, I no longer write like this, or I no longer draw like this.
Or who was that person?
Literally, like, new year, new me. But yeah. I think actually, like, I'm very happy to be now standing by it. And like, the space has given me a chance to like find a way to perform it and like talk about it that is different, because I was so in the thick of it when recording. And it's fascinating to like look back at something you made a few years ago. Any medium, anything, I think, any art and otherwise, like just being able to have space and like, you know, dig deeper.
It's so funny that you're talking about that. I got a text from my youngest last night, and it was something they're doing for work. And they're like, how'd they phrase it? Does this have it like right here? They said, I made this design for a thing at my job. Do you think it looks enough like American traditional tattoo? And so they were just having that kind of, they've been staring at it so long that it's like, it almost stops to having form. And I'm like, okay, so, you know, make it black and white. Email it to yourself, take a photo of the thing you're looking at and look at the photo instead. And it's like having that little bit of separation and like, oh my God, these are really good ideas. I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of smart once in a while.
It's literally exactly it. You're like, okay, cool. You, 'cause I think this goes on to like collaborations as well, working with other people, having other voices in the room or in your head that aren't your own.
Yeah.
Like any sort of separation from just like singularity, but also time and like all the things that we that tend to define artistic endeavors, like can really help you see it in another way. And so I'm really enjoying seeing the album in another way, with all this time and like having vinyl and stuff like is an experience I haven't done before, and like having it be a finished product and like reminding myself that like for so many years I was like, this isn't finished, what's wrong with it, what feels like it still needs a finishing touch. And now
have you achieved that feeling of a finishing touch, or are you just like, I am done with it? Because that is really two different things of it's totally done and I am done with it.
I actually do feel that this is finished. And what's funny is like so many changes happened in the last year. Like Ronnie and I recorded two new songs for the record. And I think the 2 year gap in between helped us understand like where they needed to go, mm-hmm. and what the record was not necessarily missing, but like what could make it even more shape-shifting. And we took out some songs that like, you know, were equally special, but maybe felt like those spaces could lead to new discoveries with the time. And I think we both felt that like, not quite there yet for a while. And this past year was when we got there. And I think part of it is like necessity as well, is like, we knew we needed to release it, and not just like timeline wise, but like it was time for us. And yeah. And I, that gave me an understanding of like what it meant to be finished with something. And I think I have a tendency to always be trying to make something either better or different. And so with releasing music, I've always kind of been a little bit pushier with myself about, you know, being decisive. And I'm not the most decisive person in other aspects of my life, but here with yeah. writing, I try to be, you know, more permanent. So, and I think that's cool. I think like something can be permanent and not reflective of your entire life. Like, you know, yeah. it can be a moment in time and still the right moment for that art to come out.
We're so inundated with choices that it's like, sometimes it's not even a matter of being decisive. Sometimes I don't want to make a choice.
So true.
You know, and we work a lot with bars, breweries, and restaurants. And so I'll go into one and they'll be like, Andy, the usual. And they'll give me like a Guinness. And then I'll go in somewhere else and they'll be like, the usual. And it'll be a PBR. And they're like, my friends will be like, those aren't even close to this. I'm like, I know, but it's like, I asked for one time and I'm so overlooking it. You know, these huge dictionary beer lists. I'm like, I don't want to make a decision about a beer. I just, you know, and
you just want to be at the bar sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I find that like things that are my favorite tend to be my favorite for long periods of time. Like I have like a regular breakfast order. I have my favorite director. I have.
Oh, who's your favorite director?
Agnes Varda. She's a new wave director. I can also send you like a list of her films that I love, but I like, okay. I just love her very much, both personally and like her film style and her outlook on life and art. And that hasn't changed for me. And I don't know that it ever will, but it's one of those things where there's always room to add more choices. But like, I will always have my regular things, but where I become indecisive is when other people are involved. Like if it's like, what are we all going to do? Then I don't like to make those decisions for groups.
Yeah.
So with music, it's fun because like in many ways, like this is my solo project, but I have so many collaborators who none of my work would sound like what it sounds like without them. And I actually like that I don't have to make all the decisions all the time, like, because I think that it's important to not always be the one making decisions. And
you're not always going to have all the right ideas, you know, it's, you know, having, and that's one of my favorite things about collaborating is sometimes like people be like, how about we do this kind of thing? You're like, oh my God, I would have never thought
I would
of that.
Never would have gone there. Yeah. And I think like what's really funny about, I don't know if you've experienced this as well, but like in the last few years, I feel like people have been, and I think this is awesome. And I like have done this a little bit before, but like producing themselves in music in many ways, and like not always having a big band or like collaborators coming in and out. And I think everyone has their individual style of writing. Like writing lyrics can be very personal to me, whereas like writing music isn't as personal always. I think like I have a lot of friends who don't want to have anyone else in the process, and not because they don't value other people's opinions, but because that's how they've always done it and that's how they feel comfortable writing. But I've always like dreamed about being in like a big recording studio where people are maybe working on another album over there, and they come in and they're like, oh, this is really cool, come listen to what we're working on. And like that shared sense of just like there's no bubble, there's just everyone is doing their thing and everyone is kind of interested in each other's work. I think like the pandemic in many ways created this insularness, and now I'm hoping that there can be more like of a sharing. And I think that's why I was so happy to hear about your like bars and restaurants and the different breweries that you do stuff with, because I'm so drawn to that sense of community with music and like poetry and film and all that. And I think like it's really cool to have that. And it's in New York, it can be everywhere. And sometimes
I was gonna say, I feel like New York has to have those
kind of things. Absolutely do. And a lot of friends do like song shares and stuff like that. But yeah, I'm very interested in that sense of community with like recording as well.
Yeah.
And I think like a couple different projects I've worked on have had different levels of that. And you know, one of them I did basically remote on my laptop. So it's fun to, I think it's fun to like explore the mediums of it for sure.
You would definitely dig this area then. It's like when I first moved to Plymouth about 11 years ago, 11 or 12, I think. Just another place in Massachusetts. I didn't move, you know, I'd always come to Plymouth, but I moved here to live. And I'm like, oh, wow, there's, you know, there's an art museum and there's a cool art community. And then I found out, I'm like, oh, my God, there's amazing, talented musicians here. Like we have, it's weird. There's like these up and coming, I don't want to say up and coming. I mean, there's bands who literally tour the world that are kind of like based in this area. And then there's like a whole nother section of kind of like older retired musicians that live here too.
Oh, cool.
And it's just this cool vibe. And then I told you, I think before we started, that I got involved in with the promoting stand-up comedy shows. And I'm like, oh my God, the stand-up comics are here, are off the charts. And it's just this so cool, like really cool area with all these niches that are kind of coming together.
Yeah.
And we're lucky enough to be able to kind of take part in all of them.
Yeah.
And it's we hopefully we might be kind of going into the exact kind of thing that you were talking about. We moved offices like early last year, and within 6 weeks they're like, oh, just to let you know, we're tearing this building down.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, oh, you're kidding me.
Dang.
Yeah, but it's tied up because it's like a historic building. Historic building.
Yeah.
And so it won't be probably to the end of this year. And I was talking with a friend of mine who built himself a recording studio during COVID.
Wow. Like in a house or a cabin?
In a what was or is a band practice space.
Cool.
And okay. So it's very much like if you're there, people like just stick their head and be like, hey, what's up, man? And so we got to talking, and they also have put in a band performance space that has really taken off. And he's like, it's really tough because it's kind of limiting when we can record, because if there's a performance going on, you can't record, which means there's less time for bands to practice. If bands are practicing, you can't record. So we're kind of talking about maybe getting like a shared space. And I'm like, I just love that idea of getting up to stretch your legs and be like, hey man, what are you working on? You know? And
yeah. I really love that too. I think like I wasn't really old enough or like as privy to the scene at the time, but if you know of the McKibben Lofts in Williamsburg, Bushwick, it was like a space where a lot of people were moving to Williamsburg, Bushwick, like in the aughts with like, you know, no intention to become necessarily like a band or musicians, but wanted in the art scene. Maybe they were like in the photography scene, like very much Patti Smith like vibes of, but you know, like people moving Strokes area as, and like it became a center where like performances were happening, like, you know, zoning laws, like at the time, I think we're not paying attention. Cause now like we've done a couple of rooftop shows in Bushwick when I was living there, and like the cops would come and like yell at us. Whereas then they were having them in like the junkyards of Bushwick, like before became kind of gentrified. Yeah. So I really love those stories. And like, a lot of bands took off at that time just because they were surrounded by bands that they were inspired by. And like, yeah, it's really fun. And I think like a similar thing tried to happen in New York the last few years, but we've kind of like turned it into a meme, like indie sleaze, if you've heard, with like in New York. And it's funny because I think there are awesome bands here and a big sense of community, but like, you know, there's no replicating that in New York, because New York at that time, specifically Brooklyn and North Brooklyn at the time, was really like a place where it was flourishing, and like, you know, community and like venues didn't matter. It's just about like being out and sharing new music. So I'm really excited to hear that.
Yeah. There's just something about those kind of communities that happen organically that you can't, you can't plan.
No.
I know you said your sister lives kind of in this area. You guys should swing down to Plymouth. If you guys are like foodies and like music and art, it's a cool area.
I have friends from Massachusetts who would probably like immediately when I would say it would tell me I'd like it.
Yeah, they'd be like, oh yeah,
like big time. Yeah. So yeah,
you're gonna go to look at Plymouth Rock and be disappointed, and then you go to
and they Plymouth like the Rock. No.
Yeah, well, I mean, everyone comes. Oh. It is
a big tourist destination.
It's a huge tourist destination, and everyone kind of has the same response as, oh, I thought it'd be bigger. Because it is small. It is maybe the size of a car engine. It is not.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And most people are expecting some sort of ginormous, you know, monumental thing. And it is not.
It's like what a lot of my British friends, like I went to study in London for a little bit when I was in college, and I actually never got down to Stonehenge, but I had so many friends who studied abroad. And I also studied at a school with like British students, and I would tell them like, yeah, like some of my classmates are going down to Stonehenge, and they'd like laugh, and they'd be like, well, it's literally just rocks. So
yeah, in the middle of a highway, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, they're classic Americans. So it is funny that we, you know, some of the touchstones, the like post reaction of like you slug all the way there, and then you're like, what? But it's good that, you know, they can stick around for all the art that Plymouth has, and like
and that's really how Plymouth is kind of angling itself now, is
really
less about history, because the history is super problematic, and you know, more about like, it's a seaside community with, you know, we have, oh geez, I think we're up to 7 breweries now and 2 wineries, and there's like 40 bars and restaurants all within walking distance of each other.
Awesome. So though, like a proper downtown.
Yeah, so if you like food, you can come and hang out. And I mean, it's just, I moved downtown about 12 years ago, and I'm just like, I really love it down here, because it always feels like something's going on. Always, it has that kind of, I mean, this is a little more planned out, but it has, you know, a great community, and everyone, the thing that blew me away was there's 40 bars and restaurants, most of which are like right next door or right across the street from another one. You would think they would hate each other.
Yeah.
And it's not at all. Like, it is, they go to the other guy's restaurant all the time. Yeah. You know, if they run out of napkins or towels or peaches or whatever, you run across the street and, you know, I'll hook you up next time. And it is, there's two owners, Jordan, who owns the Speedwell Tavern, and Carl, who owns the New World Tavern. And they made a bet on the Patriots. And Carl's like this crotchety old, like, he's like Plymouth's uncle. Like, you love him, but you're not really sure why.
Yeah. You can't
believe it. Yeah. And the loser is going to attend bar at the other guy's bar, and all their tips are going to go to charity.
Oh, that's great.
So Carl lost, and there was like such, the entire community is like, we're going to go and make the most complex drink orders possible. To the point where Jordan's like, I can't have all these people. I don't have that capacity. So it was at the New World. And then they decided for entertainment, they turned it into an arm wrestling competition.
Oh my God.
So every restaurant put forward two competitors, a male and a female, in this arm wrestling competition. And it became like COVID ended up like knocking it down. But when they would have it, you couldn't get anything to eat in downtown Plymouth. They do it on a Monday night.
Like a tradition.
Yeah. And like every bar and restaurant would shut down and be there. And it would like people were in costume. And
that's so fun.
It was, and it was one of those like you couldn't have planned it.
Yeah.
But because it happened in that organic way and such that sense of community that it was so amazing. It was so much fun. And it was just that's stupid, so you know?
Well, that's the thing. It's like some of our, like the best rituals and the most fun traditions are like the ones that you can't trace back to any like simplified story. Like the history and the legacy of that is so much more fun than like,
yeah,
you know, you had like a planned lemonade stand that also would have been cool, but like this is what's really great and individual. I really love that. I feel like it really colors the town in my eyes as well.
Oh just, yeah, yeah.
It's like, you know, really happy to be there and sharing in like community, honestly, and just like something about New York that I really sometimes am daunted by is like there's a clickiness with certain scenes that I don't think is necessarily like, you know, heinous, but I think it's definitely like, you know, there's something about being edgy and cool that sometimes people turn into like a weapon almost. It's
almost like it's cool to be a little
uncaring,
uncaring and off-putting intentionally to someone who's not in the scene, you know.
Exactly. And yeah. I think that like can become an inevitable piece of living in a really big city, and like sometimes it's self-protective for people, and like they, you know, you finally find your niche and you're like, well, I'm gonna make it a little alienating to others.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the music community is like that much. I honestly think, at least not within my friends or the people I've met and like been lucky enough to work with, but I think it can I've seen it happen, and I've talked to a lot of friends who are in fashion, for example, where that can be like really daunting to join
the. I was gonna say, I feel like that could be very catty.
Totally. And film too. It's just like, you know, with schools like NYU that are as big as they are, you sometimes like you realize that like people need to kind of section off, and it can become competitive. And I really love that there are places on the East Coast where that's not the case. And I've heard similar things about like Richmond and Norfolk and like smaller towns closer to the like southern eastern coast. Like my roommate's from Norfolk, and he is always talking about how lovely and like artistic everyone is, and it's kind of like a gem in Virginia where that is possible, and you feel a little bit more safe also to just exist as someone who maybe doesn't align with like the political and like aspects of the state they live in. So yeah, it's that's, I think, cool. Interesting how like different bubbles form in different places as well.
Do you feel like, and this is something that I've experienced since we've been doing InebriArt, but do you feel like that kind of community is building up amongst people that enjoy your music? Are they like the same people that are coming to the shows and kind of connecting with each other?
I've had less like personal experience with it, but I've definitely spoken to people in different cities who I felt came to the music in a similar way. Specifically, like talking to someone in Nashville on our last tour, and then just like meeting people in Austin for South by Southwest of last year, and just like playing an unofficial showcase there, and like playing some of the shows with bands that were from the UK, and like meeting people who just came out organically and like live in the city and had a similar approach to where they were like, I heard this song. And also someone I met in Brooklyn recently who like moved to New York and had already known my music. And I'm gonna shout out Cal, who came to my EP release show and spoke to me at length about like just like listening to this song Exaggerate that I put out a couple years ago every day while like cleaning and just like, you know, getting used to New York as a city. And then when we met, it was really special to talk about, you know, I had grown up in New York, and like he'd grown up in, I think, like either Virginia or somewhere in the South near Virginia. And like it was such a like constant in his New York experience, this one song of mine. And it felt really really sweet and but also like crazy to me that was that I had become like a piece of his New York, and now he had become a really special person who connected to my music to me, and I guess that to me was like the first time that happened, and it's really cool to just like meet people who enjoy music in a similar way. Like I feel very connected to artists who maybe like their songs color a piece of my experience. This was like really particular to me with the first time I went to LA and this artist Helena Deland, who like is out of Montreal, and I was listening to a lot of her music from her first record, and I was in LA like I'd gone once before in high school with friends, but like the first time I went alone, mm-hmm. and I was meeting some collaborators who would be working on photography for my EP, and they were people who I now love dearly, but at the time I didn't know, and I had all these nerves about being there alone and like not driving because I can't, and just like experiencing a city in a very specific way, and they had all these illusions about LA, and so I still listen to Helena Deland with that perspective. And so, yeah, that's kind of like the angle I've had on that. And I find it to be really interesting every time I meet someone who has a similar experience.
Yeah, it's always, to me, podcasting is a little different than music, obviously.
Yeah.
It's a lot different. But, you know, you perform in front of an audience. I'm in front of a computer screen, and I
absolutely,
tend to forget that people are listening, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've, we did an event last October, and I was walking through the event and I was talking to a friend of mine, and this guy's like, "Hey," and I'm like, "What?" He goes, "Your voice." And I'm like, "What about it?" He's like, "You're on that show." And I'm like, "What?" He's like, "You're on that podcast." And like, just from me walking through the room, yeah. he picked up on my voice yeah. that it's a show he was listening to. It was so bizarre. And I was just like, that is so cool.
That is so, so cool. Yeah.
And then he's like, it's one of the other shows we do. He's like, "Oh, I love Hannah." I'm like, "Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everyone loves Hannah. She's the best."
That's really sweet. I think it's cool to also be like, you know, because a lot of the time when you're making something and I'm sure just from hearing that you can relate, but like you're not thinking about how you're perceived at all times. And maybe in other aspects of life. If you feel that self-consciousness, like I do in many different ways, like in social attraction sometimes, but for some reason it's less strong with music. And I feel like I'm not writing for someone to listen at all times. And sometimes you are, but so when someone recognizes it and kind of like comments on it, that perception makes you also consider it in a different way. And it's really fun.
Yeah. And that's very strange, because I've gotten a lot better. I was very, very anxious in social settings when I was younger, and I've gotten over most of it, but it still lingers.
Yeah.
But if I'm on stage or on a podcast, like, doesn't even cross my mind. Like, there's not a second of anxiety. Doesn't even think about it. Like, it's so natural. But then, like, a one-on-one conversation in the right aspects, it's just like, yes, no, you know, totally different person.
I know.
And it's kind of that little bit of that, you mentioned it like very early on, about like being a little bit of a character actor.
I agree. Yeah.
I'm not saying that this isn't who I am on a podcast, but there are days when you're just like, I really don't feel like recording today.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But then you have to get on and be like, "Hey, how you doing?"
Hey guys, yeah, like demeanor shifts because, and almost by that necessity, like, I guess like sometimes I don't always feel ready to like, especially like, I guess I haven't done many extended studio time sessions. Like for this record, I like demoed a lot of the songs at a studio that I had rented out for a couple months or like a year, and I would go to work. And I would take a long train ride. I'd come to the studio and then I'd go home. And then when we were really recording, Ronnie, who produced the record, I would come to his studio and we would work on the songs, you know, for a couple days in a row. And it was very special because I think the songs came together in a really natural way. And that's, of course, not always going to be the case with anything. And it's not always the case for me personally. Also, I like will sometimes spend an entire day and not get an inch, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think the like the like having a ritual of coming every day and like feeling the necessity of like, okay, in this 8 hours, what can we do? And you won't always finish, and sometimes you'll get nothing. But with shapeshifting, it felt like these songs had come together really quickly, so the production was so much room for us to experiment and have fun, that those 8 hours became like less of a performance and more of like a magic act of like, or I guess that is a performance still, but like, yeah, a like, cool, like I'm not even gonna question it, like whatever happens happens. And then listening back, we were like, oh cool, okay, we're actually really happy with where this went, even if we weren't expecting it. And I think that's that, just making yourself appear sometimes in front of, you know, a camera or like a stage or an audience, you don't even know what'll happen always. Yeah, and that,
for
that
sure
can be a fun like boundary to push.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've always said ever since I started doing this show 2016, I think we started, oh my god,
wow,
so long. My favorite episodes are when a stranger comes in and a friend leaves.
So, oh, I love that.
And really, I feel like that's happening today because you're the sweetest person ever. That's
so, and I only have the same to say for you, and I yeah, really believe that to be true.
Shapeshifting is out on April 26th. Where can people go to get it?
You can get it at tenderlovingempire.com or on my Bandcamp, which is nisa.bandcamp.com. Nisa like NASA, the space agency, but with an I instead of an A.
N-I-S-A, yeah.
Yeah, I have stickers actually that I will ship out with the record if you buy one, and they are NASA.
Shut up, really?
And I haven't gotten a cease and desist, so I'm keeping the branding until they say otherwise.
All right, I want one of those. that's so cool. So 26, blah, blah, blah. Are you going on tour?
I am. I'm doing 4 dates as of now for the record. I'm going to do New York at Babies All Right in Brooklyn on May 7th. May 8th is Washington, D.C. at the Pie Shop. May 11th is Boston at the Lily Pad. So for any Massachusetts,
hang on.
Do it.
What was that? May what?
May 11th.
11th.
Lily Pad.
Lily Pad. Where the hell is
that? Yeah, on a Saturday night. It's in Somerville, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I like Somerville. Yeah.
Yeah, Somerville's cool. And then May 12th, ending in Philly at the Milk Boy, which I've played last year on my tour, and I really
like Philly.
Yeah, Philly's great. Yeah. It's so fun.
Are you into weird and macabre kind of stuff?
Yes.
Check out the Meter Museum in Philly.
Okay, I will. That's awesome. I hope to have more time there this year because I've just like gone on a day or two trip, and I would love to like spend more time.
Yeah, Meter was like the first doctor in this country who was like, you know, us doctors should probably go to school. And
really good realization.
Yeah, and compiled this now museum that keeps getting added to of like, I guess teaching aids, but like more like weird and odd stuff. So there's like a mummified body that's slowly turning into soap and a wall of skulls. It is so cool. And it is like a litmus test for cool people because I have like a Meter Museum sweatshirt.
Love.
And every once in a while I'll walk by, someone will be like, I love that place. I'm like, you're the coolest person.
You're actually so
cool. So
it's like, stop. We need to hang.
Yeah. All right. We're friends now. Cool. Nisa, this was so much fun.
Andy, thank you so much for having me. I had so much fun.
Anytime you have stuff to promote, you just reach out and we'll have you back on. And I gotta check my schedule. I can do that real quick. May 11th.
Love to see you in Boston if you can make
it. I can. Is it a 21 plus show?
It should be. You know what? I'll
can check that out. I only look because it's my youngest birthday that day.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, if you end up being in Boston, but don't change any birthday plans on my account, but would love to see.
They're 20, so any birthday plan with dad is going to be like, I don't know, I'm free maybe like the Thursday before.
Totally. Yeah. Okay, so. Great. So I'll definitely keep you posted on that because would love to see you both there.
Awesome.
You know, would have a list spot for you both because on a birthday, there's no way they can buy tickets on their birthday. That's just not fair.
Oh, don't worry. They were going to make me do it. Cool. Awesome. Thank you so much. Listeners, go check out Nisa on all the places Nisa said to. And May 11th, if you're in Boston, I'll probably see you there. So
thank you, Andy, again. Cool. Have an amazing rest of your day. I can't wait to listen to many, many more episodes.
Thanks. And thanks for checking out the show today, listeners. If you enjoyed the content today, you can go over to patreon.com/inebriart to support the show. You can join over there for just a few dollars a month and help us provide this fun content that you just checked out. You can also email us at inebriart.com with your questions, complaints, and concerns, or you can find us on all social medias at inebriart or at inebriart6 on Instagram. And also don't forget to check out our other shows, Bar Talk Podcast, Old Colony Cast, InebriArt, and all the other shows on the InebriArt Network, which you can find at inebriart.com. Thanks again for listening.